TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 606, and I am Libby, your host, and we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Tom. I chair Visual Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for Six Degrees of Geek.
Hi, this is Yu Sun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news.
Okay. At AMC, Camilla Morone from Daisy Jones and the Skit Six will join Tom Hiddleston in The Night Manager Season 2. Yes, it's been a while since Season 1, but...
A long one.
Good things come to those who wait. Amazon, lots of news. They've nabbed the Nurse Jackie sequel series with Edie Falco from Showtime. They've ordered a series adaptation of Andy Lane's young Sherlock Holmes novels with Hero Finds Tiffin as the lead, and Guy Ritchie's going to direct. So that kind of makes it a prequel to his movies. Adria Arjona has joined the upcoming series Criminal. Richard Jenkins has been cast in the upcoming series adaptation of Ed Brubaker's Criminal graphic novels. Jack Rayner, formerly a peripheral, joined Season 2 of the spy drama Citadel. And
I said boo for the Citadel, but continue.
Well, for them canceling it. Oh, well, boo for canceling Peripheral. I haven't seen Citadel.
I mean, boo, Citadel's bad.
Yeah.
If they could have swapped, I would have preferred a swap on that, but go ahead.
Fallout's phenomenal TV success has led to 20 million players on Fallout 76.
I'm not playing 76. I'm playing Fallout 4.
Apple TV Plus canceled Still Up, which I didn't even know was on. Okay, so CW canceled Walker after 4 seasons, even though they had picked it up for Season 5. So we're doing that still. Disney Plus has set a Vision series for 2026 with Paul Bettany starring and Terry Metalis of Star Trek Picard Season 3 as showrunner. So I guess we're not getting Star Trek Legacy anytime soon. FX is going to marathon The Bear Season 1 on the linear cable channel before Season 3 drops on Hulu. Freevee has canceled Primo after 1 season. Didn't know that was on. HBO has given a straight-to-series order for a single-camera comedy series starring Steve Carell from Bill Lawrence and Matt Tarsis. And Jeffrey Wright has joined Last of Us Season 2 as his video game character, Isaac. Yay!
Except the only thing people, I will point out, Isaac in the video game is like 30. So when they did it mocap, it was okay because he could look 30. So everybody's like, how is he going to be Isaac? Because Isaac's like a guerrilla fighter running through the woods with a big gun.
He doesn't have old man voice yet, so it'll be fine.
No. But he still has to run through the woods with said machine guns. So.
Black don't crack.
I'm not talking about his skin. I'm talking about him running.
I think he'll be fine. Okay, Max picked up Hacks for Season 4, and they canceled Girls on the Bus after Season 1.
Was that Netflix on? Did anybody watch that? I didn't watch that.
Here's the thing about
I actually heard
shows.
It was good, but I never watched it.
They don't promote anything, so nobody knows about stuff until they read that it got canceled.
Well, I mean, the thing that's weird is I heard when they were going to do it, that it got picked up to do it, and then when it came out, I heard nothing.
Yeah.
I heard it was good, and then it kind of vanished because nobody talked about it after that. And I guess nobody talked about it because nobody was watching it. So,
man,
there it went.
Oh, you know what? I did see one trailer, and then I saw the trailer, and I was like, meh. But then, I think that's what happened. And then I didn't watch it. So, totally my fault. My bad.
Netflix has ordered the adult animated series Undervale from Matt Roller, and Dan Harmon will EP that. Bradley Whitfield, Shea Whigham, and Stephen McKinley Henderson have joined Death by Lightning, the upcoming series about the rise and eventual assassination of President James Garfield. Paramount Network has finally begun production on Yellowstone Season 5.2. Paramount Plus announced that Starfleet Academy will be headed by Holly Hunter. Showtime has cast Patrick Gibson, Christian Slater, and Molly Brown as the leads in Dexter Original Sin prequel series. It's funny, everybody's doing the young Sheldon thing. I mean, NCIS is doing it, Dexter's doing it.
And I did not need a Dexter prequel.
Thank you. I was really like a didn't. Dexter prequel. We already know
they're out of ideas.
Seriously.
I'm just saying we had so much flashback with Dexter. Mm-hmm.
That well, now you'll have, you know, continuous flashbacks with new actors playing the leads.
Okay.
And that's all the news.
All right. Let's move on to the shows. First up, we're gonna talk Interview with the Vampire, and we're gonna talk episodes 2 and 3. And in episode 2, we basically finally find more vampires. The whole first episode was about them scouring all of Europe looking for vampires to teach them and to learn from. And they stumble upon a theater in France that has a bunch of vampires. And what's hilarious is they're minding their own business, not realizing that there's a protocol. When you come to a new territory, you have to announce yourself to the coven, and there's all these things you're supposed to do. And because they weren't taught anything, they don't know anything. And so the coven thinks they're being insulted, and it's a whole thing. So, Tom, go ahead. What'd you think?
I was just going to say, uppity vampires.
It's tradition, man. Tradition.
I could have pooped a brick when they look on the wall and see the painting. It's like,
What was hilarious is it was like, we were turned by Bruce. And I was like, who the heck is Bruce?
Bruce the vampire.
I was like, Bruce.
That was like the worst possible name they could have chosen. And I mean, it just screamed, I am lying to everyone. It was priceless. It's hilarious. I love that.
I forgot he was actually a real character. I was like, oh yeah, he was a vampire they ran into. And I was like, and his name was Bruce? Really? Like, okay. But yeah, and yeah, they were lying badly. They were not good liars. Allison, go ahead. What do you think?
No, I really liked it. In this particular episode, they finally brought Armand in to be one of the narrators. So you got more perspective and more of what was going on around Claudia and Louis. And so that was interesting. And the whole thing with him following him and seeing where they were going and just sort of stalking him this whole way, you know, until they finally made contact was interesting. And just, I loved Claudia's expression when she sits through their first performance. Because she is just, I mean, this could have looked so stupid with her just staring, you know, just wide-eyed at everything. I think a lesser actress couldn't have pulled it off, but I just felt the excitement that she had and this sense that she finally, you know, was among her own and just found everything about this to be just glamorous beyond words and fabulous and something that she wanted to be a part of. And all of that was great. And of course, Ben Daniels. Oh my God. Well, I don't think he's ever given a bad performance in anything. And he is just perfect as Santiago, just this calculating, charismatic figure.
Mesmerizing.
who literally plays with his food. I thought all of the, he was just eating that up quite literally. He's such a delight in that part. I'm so thrilled that they cast him in that. He was just great. So, but everything about that the episode I thought just really worked, and the story is really cranking up. And I was just really loving all of it.
Just real quick, just gonna say, Yusin, what'd you think?
I have to agree. I thought it was great. I'm really happy with the recasting of Claudia. Mm-hmm. You know, that worked out really well. I mean, you know, I think they did it because the actress left, but it, you know. It's great that she did and they had to recast. It makes it so much more tolerable because this is all about them, you know, her their journey and her, you know, finding more vampires and such. And so it was going to be focused on her. So it would have been a real drag if it had been the other actress. It would have been really hard to kind of sit through. And she brings a certain kind of gravitas to the role that really, you know, makes it me more invested in her journey and, you know, what's happening. So I really like that. I liked the, you know, I was the one that complained about Armand, you know, and so I kind of, what?
You weren't the only one.
Right. Oh, really? Who else was complaining?
Me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
I liked Armand. So you guys are crazy, but go ahead.
So I like Armand in this. I like, you know, him, you know, I like him better in this. Obviously he's got more story, but you know, I can kind of see where, you know, it, the relationship grows from and, you know, and how he's intrigued by, Louis. So, yeah, no, I really liked the episode a lot. I thought it was really good. And I liked it. I mean, I know that four episode, I'm moving right into four. Yeah, I know that. Cool. Yeah. I knew that four, I know that four, you know, revolves around even more Armand, which was great. But I almost forgot that Louis, that Lestat was in it, you know, that, you know, they brought him in and I was kind of more interested in the Armand Louis, you know, connection. So, I mean, it was good to find out, to see how they were doing, how they were relating to one another, Lestat and Armand, but I was more interested in Louis and Armand. I wanted them to get back to them kind of getting together and their relationship growing. So I thought they did that well. I was really worried because, you know, like I said, in the first episode, I was uninterested in them as a couple and I didn't know how that was going to play. And I liked how they developed that. So I liked that as well.
I will say I really miss Lestat. And so episode three really made me go, oh, right. This guy. And what's interesting, and they talked about this at on the after show, that everything that we see is from unreliable narrators. So the first season was Louis's version of Lestat, and now we have Armand's version of Lestat, and he's just like a jerk in both. And so I really kind of want like Lestat's version of Lestat. Like, I want to see who the real Lestat is now.
Well, we sort of did in this because in in Interview with Vampire, the book, we kind of get a little thing about, oh yeah, well, Lestat founded the theater and all of that, but we, all this flashback stuff, and especially the stuff that goes back to Armand before he ran into Lestat, that is from the next book, The Vampire Lestat.
Oh, I know. They said, but in the after show, they were very clear that it's still Armand's version.
Right. But they gave it his spin on it, but the events that they're using are from the next book. Yeah. So Lestat comes off a little better than he did in Louis's version, I think, even with Armand telling the tale.
Super selfish, like at the end when he's like, I love you. And he's like, yeah, I love you too, peace.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He's completely unreliable and he does that all the time. I really thought that was, especially, you know, you said you missed, and I did too, Lestat being part of this. I mean, yes, he keeps showing up as like a ghost,
yeah, like a ghost
for a Louis. A memory ghost kind of slash thing, because Louis isn't sure that he's in fact, he's pretty sure he's dead. You know, that's really not that great, you know, that doesn't give you that much. And to see him, you know, full-fledged, yes, this was Lestat, was really nice. It's like, oh yeah, that's why he was so interesting. So yeah, I really thought that was a good choice of theirs to use that from the other book.
What's the deal, the Justin Kirk character, and they talked about them a little bit in the after show. I guess he's from some kind of society of watchers.
Oh, remember the witch?
The Talamasca.
Yeah, remember the witch show? They have that secret organization that's
okay,
like,
so that's a crossover with...
They don't get into that in the book at all. She hadn't come up with the Talamasca yet. But it shows up in later vampire books and plays a major part in her witch books. So they, I thought that it was interesting that they shoehorned a little bit of that in, like, you know, just to give you this little, little tiny treat, like, okay, well, we're going to address that Justin later. Kirk,
I would presume they're, he's going to play some kind of major role because he's
right.
a pretty
right.
prominent actor. So.
Yeah. So, all right, well, let's move on. I think we're saying thumbs up.
You got to talk about the ending. When she,
oh, right.
She
right,
joins
right.
the troop when they present her little baby doll dress. And she's like, great.
The look of horror on her face is fantastic.
Especially when they tell her, you're going to be doing this for the next 50 years.
Yeah, she was just like, I mean, the whole thing, everything she's been doing is about not being a child. And they're like, we're going to dress you up as even a younger child. It'll be great. Yay.
Yeah, well, they're going to use it to, you know, eating good in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I get why they're going to do it. But also, I liked the whole Louis was supposed to be assassinated. And then instead of killing him, he lets him go, which is, of course, going to blow back on him in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
But anyway, so yes. So still thumbs up. Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk Evil, which has finally come back. Episodes 1 and 2. And I loved how it started because it starts off with, oh, God, what's the main woman's name? I just blanked.
Kristen.
Kristen.
And Michael Emerson's character, who I never remember his name because I just
Leland.
Call him Michael Emerson. When he's like all in her face talking about, I'm going to have your baby. We're going to have your baby. And he's going to be the Antichrist. And it's going to be awesome. And he just falls out laughing at him.
That does not go the way he anticipated.
No, she just starts laughing at him. She's like, oh, so you're going to change the diapers and do all this stuff. And she's like, there's a reason why they started the Damien movie after he's been potty trained. And I was I was like, that is hilarious. And I love the episode because it was very sciencey. You gave us the Hadron Collider and all of that stuff and all of the mm-hmm. science of it and why people thought the devil and blah, blah, blah. But then you watch the whole episode and they're like, the end of the world is coming in 36 days or 38 days or something. And she goes, oh, my son, the Antichrist, is going to be born in 38 days. Right? And I swear, as soon as it cuts to commercial, I fell out laughing. I just started, I was like, that's a, and I just could, I was like, I don't know why I'm laughing, but it's hilarious for some reason. So I thought they did a really good job of making this show have, be a little spooky, but still have so much humor. Because nobody takes Leland seriously. Like, not even his own cohorts. None of them take him seriously. And I just want to do the Leland story really quick. Because then even in the second episode, he's got the mom, the grandma, whatever. She's like,
Cheryl.
She's like, I want to get promoted. And he's like, she's like, I don't believe in the glass ceiling. And they give her a literal glass ceiling.
That was just.
That was hilarious. Like, of course. Like, that is just the kind of humor that the show
very, does. It's very monkey's paw.
Yeah,
it is. Well, yeah. I love the fact that they have leaned into the humor more in this in this particular season. Because, you know, they were a lot more straight-laced in season one. Right. It was more
that was the
to
CBS year.
it was more, you know, let's straightforward scare you, which they were good at. But I love the fact that they're doing the humor, especially because Michael Emerson is so great at that. I mean, just the whole bit at the beginning when she's laughing at him, saying, I can't wait to see you up at 3 o'clock in the morning changing his diaper. And he's just staring at her and his eyes are kind of flicking from side to side like, this isn't going the way I thought it would. And it's just priceless. I mean, the whole scene was great. Just her and his reaction to her was so great. And he's excellent like that. I mean, I love the fact that he thinks he's a mastermind, but he's really not.
No.
And
then just, they're like, when they're hypnotizing the husband, they can't agree on what they're hypnotizing.
Oh God, that was the best. So when they're shouting over each other, like, you know, it's a contest to see who's going to brainwash him with what.
It's almost like a dramatic foil for the cacophony of the girls all talking over each other. And
yes.
Yeah.
But I just all those little things are just are so perfect. They really get that great in the show. And I thought just, yeah, the two episodes that they had, the Collider one was great. I was not expecting something like that, you know, for them
very sciencey too, yeah.
Very sciencey. And they got a lot of it right, which I was surprised with. They, you know, it's like, okay, that's interesting. They do, you know, the going down like 2 miles down and the whole bit, and it's and making the collider as large as it's supposed to be, and talking about the science. I am interested to see what happens now with Ben after he's been zapped in the collider, and he's
Haven't
now
you
got a little djinn following him around,
yeah,
in the just in the periphery of his vision,
or when it grabs his head.
Yeah, except that the thing that I guess he still keeps trying to science it out as just a visual thing, and it's like, but it's talking to you.
I know. I was like, what are you doing, dude? And even the djinn is like, dude, I'm talking. How am I in your head? If I'm just a visual thing, why am I talking to you right now? Like, that was really funny.
It's kind of interesting that all three of the leads, in one way or another, have been compromised.
Yeah.
Because David's doing these secret missions for this Vatican group, you know, this
and
shady.
He also has visions. He has.
And he has real visions. And Kristen,
she is crazy.
Yeah.
That's the thing that trips me out about her character. She just straight up murders people. Like, how many people
it's
has.
Only
she-
one. It's only the one dude.
I mean, but she just like went over with like a stick or some kind of hockey stick or whatever, went over, murdered him.
No, it was the climbing pick thingy.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember what it was. I just knew
it was the mountaineering pick.
Yeah. She went over, murdered him very casually, like super casually murdered
and
him.
And got away with it because.
Yeah, super casual.
Because her friend knows she did it.
Oh, that's right. The cop.
Her cop
yeah,
friend.
And she's covering.
But
yeah.
But we don't know because Ben's going to the shrink, who's also been compromised by.
Oh, right, but the shrink is like working for the devil, though, now, right?
Well, we don't know if he's been brainwashed or if he's a willing participant.
I don't think he doesn't strike me as willing participant. I think it's the brainwashing.
The brainwashing.
They did the whole thing with the LP playing before.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I wonder if Kristen and Andy's doctor.
Oh, by the way, the other thing that cracks me up is every time Leland comes up with what he thinks of as a brilliant plan, the daughters are always the ones that thwart him.
Figure it out. Yeah.
So funny. But continue.
I'm wondering if Kristen and Andy's doctor are going to figure out that somebody's been giving him something because they found all the injection sites.
Right.
And he said he wanted to get drug tested, so.
Yeah, he finally has figured out something is going on. He doesn't know what, but he knows something. But all right, we're saying thumbs up. Yeah.
That demon dog was creepy too. Even
oh,
if
yeah. Oh God.
I don't know. I think I've been spoiled by one, I see it in real tech, like all the tech stuff with that dog. And two, Mirror already did the episode with the dog. And that episode was scary. And so after I saw that episode, I feel like nothing else kind of works as being scary anymore. So I wasn't really scared of the dog. Next up, we are going to talk Hacks. And we're going to talk episodes 6 and 7. And I know we're behind, and it's entirely my fault. I was behind watching it. And I was like, this show's not, this is, I'm bored. And then I was like, all right, fine, I'll watch it. And I've actually have been generally enjoying it. But I want Yusen to talk about it. We want to talk about the golf episode, which we haven't talked about yet.
307.
Yeah. Is that 6 or 7?
Yeah.
But let's talk about the golf. What do you think of that one?
I've been really enjoying Hacks this season. I think I like it when they get along. I like it when they don't get along. But you know, their relationship has moved to a new level now. So they're getting along more often, and that's natural. That's normal for them. So I really liked, you know, seeing the golf episode where they were partying together and they were really, she was really supporting her and they were like a team.
Oh, right. She was doing the flashcards for her because she kept forgetting all the people. So she was smooth because the golf thing was all about smoozing all the local affiliates. And so she had to get all her info right.
Right, exactly.
But her playing dumb to I don't know his character's name. I'm just going to call him the president.
Right, right.
Oh, Tony Goldwyn's character.
Tony Goldwyn.
I just called him the president. And I have to say, it was super weird seeing him. I don't know. I guess in my head, he can only
play. He's made a TV career of playing Himbo Skank Boys.
Tony Goldwyn.
Starting with the Murphy Brown pilot.
Through
Scandal, and of course now Hacks.
Yeah, because he's just like, she's just playing dumb. She's like, oh, is that how you hit the ball?
I'm just a poor woman. I have no idea.
And I was like, what is going on? Because we had just seen her just whacking the ball and making sure she was good. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, please help me. And what was hilarious is her old friend from Vegas was like, what is going on? Like, he was very confused.
That her old frenemy from Vegas.
Yeah. Well, her old boyfriend, technically.
Lover.
Yeah. So he was just confused. He was like, what are you doing? And I like that her attitude just like flipped as soon as she found out they gave the job to the young kid. She was like, screw this. Hate everyone. Whatever. Don't care. And then she just started beating everyone on the court.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Like I said, court. Is it the pitch? What do you call it with a golf? What's that? It tells
course.
You.
Course.
There we go.
Like, the golf course.
I love that she also just showed up in black the next day. It's like
I'm in mourning, but whatever. I'm just going to kick everybody's butt. And then she just like has sex with the... Tony Goldwyn, she was like, because he was like, it's really hot. And I was like, dude, you should have been awesome before. Playing the helpless woman actually worked against her, I think. Once he saw she was good, he was like, oh, now you're hot.
No, I think
it was... when they first meet, I'm a big fan of my humor. And he says, of your everything. So you knew where that was going.
Yeah, he had a thing. Yeah, I get it. But I think... she played herself wrong by pretending to be weak, is what I'm saying.
I don't think that was it. I think it was that, yes, he's attracted to her. He just not to give her a job. That's the thing. That's the glass ceiling in this show. And you know, and it finally disappeared when they were able to get rid of the guy. But yeah, it was like, yes, I love everything about you. Unless, of course, there's this shiny new guy over here who I can give the job to instead of you.
Right.
So, you know what else I also loved about the show was Christina Hendricks.
Oh my God.
She was hilarious.
She was like, what does she call it? She's like, you're the caddy and you're so dirty. And she's like, I just took a shower. And she
it's like, are you a Republican? Well, yes.
She's obviously. Like, are you gay and a Republican? Oh my God. All of that was so funny. And then she's like, and I was just tend to think I was gonna pee on you later. She's like, you are not gonna pee on me.
She's like, yes, I was.
All of that was fantastic. Yeah, you're right. That was pretty good.
All of that was great.
And then the next episode,
Deborah Vance Christmas Spectacular.
Yes, because it was so great. She walks outside and there's snow, but I was like, wait, why does her face look weird? And then you realize, oh, she's sweating. And I was like, wait, what? And then they widen the shot and you see the snow machines going. I was like, oh, she's in Vegas and it's hot and that's fake snow. Okay, that makes way more sense. And I like that I don't remember if this episode was the one before where you find out that the dwarves were problematic, but she sent them all with her invitation.
Elves,
dwarves, yes.
Elves.
She sends then we finally meet her mystical sister that we've heard about for all these seasons, and I have to say I was slightly disappointed in the casting. I was like,
oh, she's from Succession. Really? She's terrific.
She's brilliant in Succession. I was thrilled to see her. And I think they look like sisters. I think they do.
They wrote that role for her because they met at in the interviews afterwards. They said, we met at an HBO function and said, hey, would you ever consider doing our show? And she said, well, yeah, if my schedule's free. Yeah, I think she's terrific.
I mean, I don't know. I think I thought she would be, they'd act more like sisters, and they didn't. And so I think that's what kind of threw me off. I didn't.
Oh, but they haven't been. They haven't seen each other in. Like,
I know, but
they,
not.
They were cut off in decades
personality.
Ago.
I meant personality. I thought that they would behave closer. Like the way that she's been describing her sister didn't fit with what I saw.
No, but
well, I think that's intentional, though.
Deborah's always been the alpha in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally see when Deborah's husband makes a pass at little sister-in-law, who's younger.
Yeah, much younger. So that's super creepy. but yeah, I get her comment. She was like, I was 19. I didn't know. Like that, I'm like, okay, that totally makes sense. And then she tells a story. And I was like, okay. But then she marries him and then they live together for years. And then she's like, why are you still mad? I was like, are you serious? Like that I did not give her a pass on. And the whole couple episodes were all about, I don't know if we've gotten to that yet, but,
we're not going to get to the conclusion.
Not going to get to that yet, but I just, yeah, I don't like her sister.
No. I did. I thought, first of all, I don't see any problem with her marrying the guy, because other than from her perspective, it's like, why would you marry a guy who's already proved that he cheats on people? But the thing is that part of the reason, remember, and that she brings up is that Deborah was so involved with her career that she was ignoring her husband, and he felt that, you know, she was never present, she was never around. So at a certain point, you know, I mean, let go of it. Your marriage wasn't working already. And what happened was bad, but no. I can't blame the sister, especially at 19, for mistaking this as true love and marrying the guy.
But that's the kind of thing, though, that a relationship would never recover from.
Yeah, that's not, you don't make up for that. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that's not a oops. And at first, her sister tried to play it off like, when I was 19, I had this affair with him, and it was a mistake. He took advantage of me. That's pretty much what she says. And then she's like, and I didn't ever want you to find out, but he told you because he wanted revenge on you to make you upset. And then that's how you found out. And then she married him. And I was like, what? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, but the relationship was already over. I can understand her never forgiving the husband. But no. Her sister, I don't know. That's something else.
No,
I've seen situations where, I mean, remember the song Jesse's Girl? I wish I had just, because she used to be mine. I mean, she's my best friend's girl, and she used to be mine. That's the stuff that will kill a friendship forever.
That killed a friendship and like no, there's no forgiving.
There is no return from that.
That's the not big thrust of the, cover from.
Aside from the relationship drama, the subplot, which was very important, is Kayla proves that she's more than just a comic relief punching bag. She finds out from Daddy that the host appointed of the show, his dream project is a Fatty Arbuckle biopic, and Christopher Lloyd plays Fatty Arbuckle's fictitious last, you know, son, because he didn't have any heirs in real life.
He's like his grandson, I think.
Yeah, that was some pretty good intel. That was good.
But that was, I thought it was cool that Kayla and the agent work together well, and then basically woo the guy. Oh, and Deidre Hall, who they've named.
I loved her cameo. That was great.
As his mom, actually shows up to play the mom. And right. So she helps charm the Arbuckle scion. And so they get the rights. So the, you know, Deborah's Christmas gift from her manager is you're back in the running.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. All right, we're going to wrap that up. Thumbs up. As much as I was all bah humbugging, I take my bah humbugging back. Take it away.
Yeah, we told you it was good. We told you to hang in there.
Cinnamon rocks.
Yeah. All right, next up, we're going to talk Bridgerton, which you guys are going to talk about without me because I was not feeling like a period romance. I wasn't in the mood. So I didn't watch it. So you
go ahead, Allison. I think you're the biggest fan of the show. Go ahead.
Am I? Okay.
I think so.
Well, that's because, you know, I mean, I loved season one. Season two, though, was just a disaster area. It was so boring. And so I was kind of going into this thinking, well, I don't know. I'm not so sure about this. I guess, you know, I'll give it a shot. but I, you know, really didn't particularly care for season two. But I was pleasantly surprised because this season is really firing on all cylinders. It's more like the fun and sweetness and just, you know, silliness of season one back again. And it's focusing on a relationship that I actually care about. Cause we're now in the territory. They moved actually one of the books ahead in the schedule. And we're focusing on Penelope and her relationship with Colin and what happens in the aftermath, of course, of Penelope's friend, and I'm forgetting her name now, finding out that she is secretly the
Mrs. Whistledown.
Mrs. Whistledown, Whistledown. Yes. Lady Whistledown. Yeah. And so we're seeing like the dissolution of a relationship on one hand and the creation of a relationship on the other, because Colin apparently went off on a trek through Europe and he's mm-hmm. come back a new man
with a personality
and everything. And, you know, he's apparently found a gym off in Europe and worked out. So he's all, you know, very,
and
his
they
abs
made
are
us,
looking
they,
good
and
too.
They totally made sure we knew that he had gone off and got worked and worked out, because
I
like
bet you Shonda and her people said you need to work out during hiatus because you're going to be showing some skin, boy.
Yeah, yeah. And right off the bat in the carriage, he suddenly just miraculously needs to change clothes right there. You know?
It takes off his entire shirt, and I was like, "Wait, what show am I watching?"
It's a Shonda. You're in Shondaland, girl.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
Yes.
Shonda knows what women want.
Yeah. So because, you know, when they went away, I never really thought much about Colin. I mean, he was sort of wishy-washy as a character, just kind of faded into the background until he actually dissed Penelope, and he was actively cruel in the way he spoke about, you know, oh, I'd never, you know, be with her. Mm-hmm. to his friends. And I thought, okay, you're dead to me. And so I didn't know how they were going to recover from that. And they did, you know, he's just a much more interesting character and a much more gentlemanly character. It's like he grew up when he went away. So yeah, that was,
and
that
that's
was
believable.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, he's had experiences that
you can... fancy whorehouses he visited.
Right.
I think it's just that, you know, he grew up is the thing. That's the impression that I get. And he's not, and especially when he comes back and he has dealings with his old friends and they feel kind of, you know, juvenile and coarse to him by comparison now. So I think all of that was handled really, really well.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought, you know, developing his character into a lead is important because he's going to be the lead of the series. So if I don't buy into, you know, his change and his growth and his development, then I'm not going to be invested in his relationships, you know, and his journey with Penelope. And then as far as Penelope is concerned, I thought she played her role really sweetly, you know, being so confident as Lady Whistledown, but then, you know, in real life, you know, having to, you know, try to find a husband and, you know, interact socially and, you know, all of that. I thought that it was very, very sweet. And she looks beautiful. They did a beautiful job with her costumes.
Oh, yeah.
The colors that they chose for her, the silhouettes they chose for her. They really did a beautiful job of moving away from the citrus colors and those neon mm-hmm. colors.
Yeah, well, they make a big thing of it. It's literally, yes. You know, they do a whole glow up on her.
Yep.
And as soon as, frankly, when she was standing in front of the mirror at the tailor's, and she holds this big piece of light green fabric up to her, and it's just, I mean, she's just holding this chunk of fabric, and I'm thinking, yes, that's her color. And sure enough, in the next scene, that's what she's dressed in. So I was like, yes, finally.
Yeah. Yeah. So even that they do a great job with. So, I mean, it's a fun show. I also didn't watch season two. I watched one episode of it and I noped out and I thought, nah, I was like, I have no interest.
The gender roles. How clever.
Yeah, totally. So I was very, very not interested. So I was not interested in this season at all. But I was told by you guys, I think, or at least by Allison, that it was good. And so I thought, all right, I'll pop in. And, you know, it's light cotton candy stuff, nothing remotely, you know, serious. But if you're going to do it, then do it well. And Shonda is doing it right this season. So it's fun. It's fanficky. You know, you know, all about the relationship. And, you know, I think there's that B story with the sister that isn't particularly interesting. You know,
yeah, that's the only thing about the
one who's trying to be the jewel of the season or whatever.
Yeah, the one who's it's supposed to be the diamond.
The diamond, that's right.
Piano playing sister.
Queen Charlotte.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but not only is she boring, but the guy who they're pairing her up with eventually is just dull as dishwater and
super boring.
So I think that bit doesn't
season. So
sorry,
I said that's usually the setup for the next season, so they're giving you like a preview.
Well, they've got to go back and do book three though. This is book four.
Yeah, so they're going to have to. Well, you know, I mean, they can do what they want. I have heard things since I haven't read the books, but I have heard things that her character does become more interesting later on because of other things that
does
happen.
She go abroad and get a personality too.
Apparently, that's apparently how you accessorize in Bridgerton.
I really like Nicola Coughlin. I mean, especially because season one, she's the plucky underdog we're rooting for because everybody treats her so I mean, she's almost treated in her family like Cinderella, even though these are her full-blooded sisters and her mom.
Yes.
But her sisters are such idiots. I mean, they're both married and they're all trying to produce a male heir so they don't lose.
And they're married.
Oh my God. And that's so funny. They don't know what sex is. That's hilarious.
I have a feeling that if she can cross the finish line in time, that she'll be the one to produce the male heir.
Yeah.
So are we upping?
Oh yeah, it's
yeah, it's fun.
I blew through the four episodes that are available and eagerly await the second half of the season.
Yeah, that's the thing. They are going to be doing the second half, I think, at the end of this month. And so, you know, there is that little wait period where you're just kind of going, I want to see the next, but it's not, you don't have to wait too terribly long. And this season really is a thumbs up for me.
Yep.
Let's move on. We're going to talk about Doctor Who and we're going to talk about episodes.
Do we have to cry while we're talking about it?
Well, the only reason he didn't cry in episode four is he really wasn't in it.
Like, he wasn't in it.
Seriously.
In episode four.
My intel says that the reason why he's light in 104 and 105 is because he had to finish off his stuff for Sex Education season four.
I did figure.
Okay, that actually makes sense.
But yeah, but when we got to the end of five, I'm like, oh my gosh, Allison is going to.
If he cries one more time.
But it the thing about that, and I'm gonna I know we're doing this out of order, the thing about him crying at the end of five is that was not the appropriate reaction for the situation.
No,
like I was like, if that had happened to me, tears is not what would have happened.
I'd be swearing, I'd be blessing him out.
I know. Oh, I'd be like, peace dude, I'm out. Like, you don't want me to say
I'd be more rude than that.
Yeah,
it's like, fine, you do that. Yeah,
let's back up. Let's do four, which is the Ruby Rose
73 yards.
Yeah, 73 yards. Which I, as I was watching it, I was thoroughly enjoying until I got to the end when I was like, wait, so what was the episode about? You know, so I liked it. I like the that she's like living her whole life, got this creepy person that can only be no, and whatever she's saying freaks everybody out and they run away and she loses her mom and like all of the things that happened in the episode I thought were great until they reveal at the end that the old woman is her, which
that was such a giveaway.
I know. Everyone guessed that, I'm sure. But the thing I felt that was so unsatisfying about it was we don't find out what she's whispering to everyone. We don't find out the things she's like doing a whole mime thing at people. We don't find out. We never see a close up of what that is.
It was all a cheat.
Mm-hmm.
All of it was a cheat because I was like, wait, so it's her, which we figured out. we've now done a time loop. So they got out of the time loop. What was she saying to everybody that freaked everybody out? What was like, how did she like, what? So the end of the episode ruined the episode for me.
RTD, after his first run on Doctor Who, had a mini series called Years and Years that basically sci-fi political thing. And he's kind of mining some of the concepts of that. It had some Black Mirror-ish elements to it, and it had some political.
But then you have to resolve it well. That's the problem.
Say what?
But then you have to resolve it well.
Oh, I'm not saying he resolved it well, but I'm just like, you're ripping yourself off, dude. Because I saw your miniseries where you dealt with a person like that. Right. In the miniseries, it was Emma Thompson, who's like this candidate from hell who becomes prime minister. So I just thought it was a big nothing burger.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. And
while I was watching it, I was enjoying it until you get to the end and you're just like, wait, what? Why did I watch that episode? Like, there was no reason to watch that episode.
I will say that Millie Gibson has some chops.
She was good, yeah, but it didn't.
I think the acting was solid throughout, but the story itself was pretty terrible. The thing is, for me, it didn't even take till the end, although I was like giving it to that to see if it rescued itself. But all I saw were all these, you know, and especially because prior to the episode, RTD kept going on and on about how, oh, this is the new thing that we've never done anything like this. It's so brand new. It's you've never seen it on Doctor Who and blah, blah, blah. And when I'm watching it, I'm going, yes, I've seen this before. It was called Blink and it was so much better. Or the girl who waited. And you know, and I've seen the same concept. Hell, the Magicians did the same idea so much better. And there was a point to it, you know. I mean, the whole idea of living your whole life in an alternate way until you grow old and then you go back and suddenly you're young again, and that never happened, or it happened in an alternate universe or whatever. I mean, all of that I have seen done before, and I've seen it done better. And I was waiting to the end to see if there was some reason that justified doing this, or what, you know, all the weirdness that we're seeing. And like you said, Libya, you get to the end and you're just going, what? Did you run out of time? Did you run out of film? I mean, what happened? Why am I not getting a resolution to this?
Did you run out of story?
Yeah, did you run out of ideas?
It wasn't a story. Just resolve it, man. Just tell me what did she say to these people that made them all freak out and run away?
Yeah, well, you never find out why. And also, you never find out what was so important about her going back and stopping this politician. When we see the thing at the beginning, the doctor is telling her about this politician who almost did terrible things, but apparently was stopped. And so before Ruby has anything to do with this, we know that, you know, the world went on and everything was fine ultimately, and this guy didn't get his way. So why was it necessary to stop him? And even if that happened, even if she did go back and stop him, since when she saw herself on the other hill and stopped the doctor from walking into the fairy circle, she essentially broke that that alternate
loop,
and they didn't go into that reality, so she didn't go back and stop him. So what was the point? It was just like I was so disgusted by the time I got to the end of it. I thought it was an hour of my life I will never get back again.
Yeah, I did. Like I said, I did enjoy the acting, but let's move on to the next episode.
Not in Bubble,
which felt like a Black Mirror
episode.
I was like, I've seen this Black Mirror episode. Like, it felt familiar. Like, I'm sure I haven't seen this exact episode, but I feel like I've seen a Black Mirror episode close enough to this that I was like, oh, this is their Black Mirror episode. Okay, cool. I will have to give them points. I thought it was hilarious that the woman couldn't walk without the thing telling her to go forward, right and left. And I, because when she takes it off and kept running into the desk, I was like, what's going on? And she's like, I don't know how to walk on my own. And I was just like, oh my God, that's pretty good. So that was good. But I have to say, they caught me by surprise because I did not see her betraying her idol.
Ricky September.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. I was like, whoa. And she had zero guilt about it.
Nope.
Yep.
He's a sociopath.
And I was like, wow. Okay. I did suspect the whole racist thing, though, because when you saw her bubble with all her people, they all look the same.
Yes, it was an ocean of Aryan.
Yeah, I did see that, and I was like, "That's weird." Like I noticed. So then her attitude with the doc, and also the way when she blocked him when he first showed up, I felt it a little bit there. So when you get the reveal at the end, I was like, "Oh, that makes sense." Like that made sense to me.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Because the thing is, they did it in a subtle way, because when they brought in Ruby to talk to her and she accepted her, I could write it off as, well, Ruby knows how to speak her language. She's younger and she's got that attitude and she's using the language that she's used to. And so that's why she accepts her and she's able to communicate. So I wrote it off that way. And they drop little subtle breadcrumbs all the way through that give you these little hints, which I appreciated. It wasn't hitting you over the head with it. It was just these little tiny breadcrumbs. And I thought really, this was by far my favorite episode of the season. And I think it's the most successful narratively. And I really, when she got her idol killed, when she deliberately calculatedly
threw him under the bus, ran over it, left tire track.
I mean, it was that just it blew me away. My jaw just dropped open, and I almost got up and like applauded the television because it was like, I mean, it was god awful. It was just ghastly. This you're looking at this horrible character, but it was something I
do like the when he realizes that she's betraying him that way.
Yeah,
the look on his face was great.
Yes, it was just really good. It was brilliant. And the thing is, if you want to talk about something you don't see on Doctor Who, that was it.
Yeah.
She's this character that, you know, they've been trying to save and who you've been looking at as a protagonist, even if she's absolutely dense and shallow at the same time. But still, you know, you think she's going to be someone we root for. And then she does this sociopathic, absolutely horrible thing. And gets away with it. And I'm like, I was just stunned that they did it. And then of course they doubled down later and showed that not only she, but the lot of them were just a bunch of racists. Yeah. And I love to, you know, the thing is the doctor's reaction drove me out of my mind for all
because he cried.
Because
again.
He cried, and that's not the what you do. What I liked was Ruby's reaction
to that situation.
Yeah,
that
the thing is, I like Ruby's reaction because if you look at her, even though the camera's not really focused on her, more it's more on the doctor. She's like already went. You're dead to me. I'm done. We're done here. And it's like that's the reaction you have.
Yes. Yeah, that was exactly. And I liked that Ruby was just like. Huh. And she's turned around and walked away. And I was like, yes, that right there is what you do. And he was like, no, please. I beg you. I was like, what are you doing? Like, dude, what are you doing? And then even if he had begged, just no tears. Like, there's too much. It's too much.
Man. He should have done the Willy Wonka, classic Willy Wonka. No, please don't.
Thank you. That would have been good. That would have been good.
Yeah, especially since they went off in one of those little
boats,
you know, boats. it looked exactly like it should be going through the chocolate factory.
But we need to wrap this up. We got one more show to talk about. But I like that second episode a lot. I really did.
Except for the crying.
Except for the crying. And they've really got it. You know, it's boat. Like it's turning into some weird sort of, you know, character tick of his, or it's like, I don't know, a signature move or something, but they need to stop. They need to get someone to just say, okay, let's not do this episode, shall we?
All right, so let's move on. So now we are at the series finale of Star Trek Discovery. Dun dun dun. This is the thing that's weird is they finished shooting season 5 and then the network was like, and now you're canceled. And then they gave them 3 days to shoot pickups to wrap the whole show.
Which was the epilogue. Flash forward sequence.
Which is why the show ended 5 times, maybe 7 times.
It was not the Lord of the Rings ending. It was the Rings ending.
Every time I didn't realize that the show was longer than a normal episode either. So it felt extra long, but every time I was sitting on the couch and I was getting ready to get up, I was like, oh wait, there's more. And then I sat back down.
It's the series finale. Come on. Everybody has to say goodbye. Oh,
you had the climax, the anticlimax, and the epilogue.
Yes. That was crazy.
I didn't mind it, except that I felt like what it was in the epilogue when they go to her. Well, let's talk about the episode before we get to the episode.
So sure.
The episode itself. Or the lead two episodes leading up to it is basically it's the end of this whole scavenger hunt that they've been doing.
To find the progenitor's technology.
Right, which if you will look back in my podcast at episode 2, I said, hey, this seems like really dangerous technology. We should probably leave it alone and not find it. And maybe destroy the keys to finding it, because no one person should have the ability to create or destroy the entire galaxy. And
life in the entire galaxy.
Okay, sure. And then I said it for every single podcast. I was like, we should not do this. And they keep doing it. They keep going, almost getting everybody killed. They do all this stuff to find the next clue. And they're doing this. They're sacrificing that. And I was like, guys, what are you doing? Just stop. And then when they finally get the final clue, they're like, oh, maybe we should not have discovered this. Thing one person should not have this technology. I was like, really? Guys are late. And I know you said, Tom, that you're like, oh, well, then there'd be no story. I was like, yeah, maybe mm-hmm. came with a better story. So that's all I'm saying. But I love the characters, I love the journeys that they all went through. And I liked Maul and Michael having their big conflict and fight and trying to make a truce, but then betraying each other very obviously.
Maul betrayed first, so.
Well, actually, Michael betrayed first. Michael was like, we have a deal. You put down your gun and whatever. And Michael's actually the one that hit her first. So Michael did the betrayal first, technically speaking. But whatever. But she also knew Maul was going to betray her. So it wasn't like it was a surprise. But yeah, and then I liked the life form, the progenitor. We finally meet a progenitor. I thought that was really cool. So that part of the story really worked for me.
Wait, why? What was so cool about her being the progenitor?
Just the fact that what she talks about. She's like, we actually didn't create this technology. We found
that was kind of cool, the fact that that reveal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been waiting here for thousands of years to find someone who passed the test so I could pass on this knowledge. And I can tell you're the right one. And just like all the things she said, she was like very much wise woman, been around thousands of years kind of. And they revealed interesting information. So I like the actress portraying her. She had a gravitas about her that I really liked. So all of that really worked. The only thing is I kind of missed once she got out, because she was like, I'll be back after I'm sure all my friends are cool. And she totally doesn't come back. She shoots her through a black hole. And I was like, really? You didn't say bye? Nothing? Okay. Unless we're supposed to assume that she did. It felt weird that she left it the way she left it.
Yeah, I agree.
The technology?
No, the woman that the progenitor. When
she said, back.
She said, I'll be back as soon as I'm sure my friends are okay. I'll be right back. And then she shoots it into a black hole. And so as far as we know, she never came back. And that woman's just waiting around for her. In a place that has no time, has no meaning. And I thought that was just rude. That's all.
So, I agree. I do. I thought that too, actually.
But I did. Then you get to the whole, they gave me the wedding, which I was very happy. We got the wedding.
Oh, you got to talk about how they got rid of the Breen. I thought that was a clever thing.
Oh, you mean Saru, how he threatened them?
How they basically separated the saucer section from the secondary hole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
And then They used the spore drive to send the Breen to the galactic barrier.
Right.
They were like, that was cool. Take them a couple of decades to get back. They'll be fine. So that's their own TV show, the Breen coming back, Voyager. Yeah, that was a cool trick. I liked that as well. And then we can get to the epilogue.
Epilogue. Which
we, because I was so sure that Michael and Book were not going to be the end game because they were like, we're never coming back together. We have all this tension. This not going to work. And then
they telegraphed it the whole time through.
I know.
And I know you weren't shipping them, but I was. So
okay, fine. I was like, all right, fine. I guess they're together. Like, it's not like I had an alternate ship that I wanted. I just felt like, considering what happened last season, they ran their relationship to a place that I really didn't like at the end of last season. So this season, when they're like, they're not going to be together. And I was like, great. And then, of course, they get to the end and they're together. And I was like, all right, fine. It's the end of the show, whatever. And then they did our flash forward and she's 60 maybe is what they were going for. I wasn't quite sure.
Pushing 70. If she's retired, she's probably mid-60s to 70.
Something like that. And I like how they only gave her a couple of wrinkles. They gave her just...
Black don't crack!
Gave her just a few wrinkles.
A couple age spots.
Yep. And then they gave Book even less. I was like, really? Okay. But they had a nice, handsome son. I was thumbs up.
Yeah.
Like their son looks... And he,
you're shipping yourself and the son?
No. I just said that he looks like a nice mix between the two of them is what I was going for. And I did like all of that leading up. And then they basically, because of the short treks where the ship ends up way at the end of the galaxy, abandoned for however long, they were like, now we have to send the ship there. And I was like, okay, based on a red directive, based on whatever.
So Although they cheated by giving it a designation, which I rewatched the short track and there was no A designation.
No, they took it off. That was what they were taking it off. If you see the robots, they're taking the A off, and then when the ship takes off, the A's gone.
Okay.
So they took the A off.
Okay, never mind.
But yeah, it was, I didn't mind it. It strangely reminded me of the Babylon 5 series finale where
Keeping in Light.
Yeah, when Sheridan's on board the ship and he's old and he's back in the command chair and he says goodbye. I mean, that was by far
sadder. Except for he knows he's going to die.
Yeah, that was by far sadder. But it gave me the same vibes, but not the same emotion. So, like, I was like, I think I'm supposed to feel something here. Because then her goodbyes to everybody when they did that flashback and they showed her saying goodbye to everybody, I was like, meh. Like,
did manage to get the legacy bridge characters back because of... Because of the long delay and the COVID stuff and whatnot, one of the reasons why you didn't see a lot of the familiar bridge characters was because they weren't available. So they brought them back for that one shot. So we got all of our bridge characters.
And I missed them. So that meant it meant more for her to say goodbye to those guys than whoever the new two people that I didn't care about were. So it meant more to see those guys.
I like Commander Jimison. She's named after a real space shuttle astronaut.
I know that's who she's named after, but I didn't particularly like her specifically. I miss my people. So I was glad that we said goodbye to the real crew.
And I wish it had ended it there because I didn't need to see the whole series end with just her flying off into space by herself. Like I don't know, I didn't need that.
They wanted to close the loop on the short trek episode,
right. I mean, they had the big salute goodbye and all that was fine. I mean, and after their goodbye, her flying off was like another less than two minutes, so it wasn't like it was a long time. So
no, but it was yet another ending.
I was okay with it. I was fine with it. It just, you know, it was all right. So that's all I got to say. I mean, I felt like they got their happy ending. They got a happy ending.
Yeah. It was no All Good Things or What We Leave Behind. I put it like in the middle of Star Trek series finales. You know, right. It wasn't the disaster that the these were the Voyages that Enterprises
Oh my
was.
God.
That was just terrible. And Voyagers was okay. Endgame, it was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I think I watched that one. But to be fair, I had skipped several seasons, but I watched the finale and I was
We
like,
missed nothing.
I know. And I was like, ooh. And this one, it felt complete. It felt solid, but mediocre. It was right. You're right. It was like right in the middle.
Middle of the road.
Yeah, middle of the road. Gave me my happy ending. Nothing crazy happened. They did not fumble the ending. They didn't make it rise above. But I also feel like that's not entirely their fault because they didn't know that it was going to be the ending. So if
it was no How I Met Your Mother, that's for sure.
All right, let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this up. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You can listen to us on sci-fi.radio and 6 Degrees of Geek. And you can now see us on YouTube. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.